Hi, this is Bruce Buffer, your voice of the Octagon, and you're listening to MMA Mental.
Welcome to this week's MMA Mental podcast, sponsored by UK Fightwear. Also, our debut show on the new MMA Victor Radio. MMA Victor Radio will be bringing five brand new shows to you each week. We'll have one show every weekday. So the schedule, just so everyone knows, on a Monday we'll have the Early Stoppage podcast hosted by Jay Jeans. Tuesday we'll see Word on the Street, which is hosted by Ramses, which will be a live show. Wednesday we'll see the MMA podcast hosted by Jake, also be a live show. Thursday we'll have the MMA Roundtable, which will be hosted by Jake. We'll have myself on there, Patrick from MMA Mental, Jay from the Early Stoppage, Chris from MMA Podcast, and Ramses from Word on the Street. And then Friday will be the MMA Mental Podcast, which of course is my show. So we've got two great guests lined up this week. First of all, earlier on in the week we spoke to Frank Trigg. I was lucky enough to meet Frank when I was in Sweden at the UFC on Fuel TV card, and I arranged an interview with him there, so it was great to get him on the show. And then we speak to our first Tough 17 contestant, hopefully first of many. I'll be looking to get as many of the cast on as I can, because it's always great speaking to the guys as they come out of the house. But we speak to Zach Cummings. It was great to get his inside view on the way things were in the house. It was really interesting. So yeah, here are our two interviews.
Okay, we're now joined by UFC veteran Frank Trigg. First of all, Frank, just want to say a big thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me down. It's taken a little while for us to get this together. I'm glad it finally worked out.
Yeah, I mean, as well. I knew it was going to be worth sticking with anyway. Like I said to you, we bumped into each other in Sweden, and I said to you that I've been following your career for a long time, so I was certainly looking forward to speaking with you. Let's go right back to the beginning. Obviously, you started fighting professionally in 1997. And obviously, at that time, mixed martial arts was not well known and was not established like it became now. What made you want to get into mixed martial arts?
Well, I actually started in '96, right after my eligibility ran out with college wrestling. The NCAA doesn't allow you to do anything else where you're making money while you're still competing for colleges. So I started right after my eligibility ran out in '96. Did a couple of, back then they were underground, illegal, you know, fights or whatever, but we're getting paid. The reason why I started MMA as a whole was because I was trying to make an Olympic team and a world team. And I just had this conversation about 10 minutes ago with Daniel Cormier, who's fighting this weekend, ready to fight Frank Mir, about he's actually going to, I think it's Oliver, one of the new wrestlers that's trying out this week for the world team here in Vegas for freestyle wrestling, for Olympic wrestling. Daniel Cormier is actually taking money out of his own pocket to sponsor this guy. He's helping sponsor this guy as he tries out for Olympic Dream because there's no money in it when we're trying to do it. I started fighting to pay so I could continue to train as a wrestler. That's the only reason why I started fighting. It was the next logical step. It was the easy way for me to make money while still trying to wrestle. And then I found out after the 2000 trials when I lost to Brian Dolph, who ended up taking second in the trials, that I just was not going to make an Olympic team. I just was not going to be able to get in it all the way. So I moved to L.A. And started pursuing MMA full time at that point. And that was right in the middle of 2000, end of 2000, October or so, November of 2000, I moved to L.A.
Now, you said there about doing it full time, but before you did full time, you actually made your way over to Japan and fought in Japan. And of course, you fought on one of the early Pride Fighting Championship events as well. First of all, what was it like fighting in Japan? And secondly, what was it like fighting for Pride? Because obviously, at one stage, Pride was considered bigger than the UFC. So what was it like fighting in Japan and fighting for Pride?
Well, you remember, not only did I fight for Pride, I also commentated for them. I commentated their last 10 shows. I was their main color guy for America. Like, I did all the analysis work, you know, whenever they were being aired in America. So for me, I was with them at Pride 8. I fought Fabiano Iha, who he and I are real close friends. We fought each other in Pride 8, became friends after that. And then I went all the way through and commentated from like Pride 20 through Pride 34, and then it got purchased up by the UFC and closed it down. Going over there back in the day, even as a commentator, we got so much. The fan appreciation is ridiculous over there. It's a warrior society. Japan, their number one sport still is sumo. It's still sumo is their number one sport. They're still a a fight country. They have a fight culture. The difference over there of like all Japanese fans versus American fans, the Japanese understand the ground game because of judo. They understand that the national martial art for Japan is judo. They understand how the ground game works. So when you're on the ground in a fight, they get it. They love guys like Aoki over there because he's such a ground technician. They love guys over there like Barry Yoshida because they're such a ground in Garbaka and those guys because they're all ground technicians. They love those guys. And the Japanese fans don't care if you win or lose. They just want to see a good fight. So if you go out there and you win a really boring fight, they're not going to call you back to come back and fight again. But if you go out there and put on an exciting fight, and even if you lose, but it's exciting, that's all they want. That's all they want. It's really interesting flying over Japan. I've been over there 36 times, 37 times for different events, and I love it. Japan is one of the most fun countries you can go to. And it's very, very old school, traditional, 1800 style of mentality meets, you know, the Western style of everything has to come together and be quick and it's bright lights and party all the time kind of mentality. So you go over there and you see this very dynamic of East meets West. And it's almost confusing sometimes. You're not ready to deal with it.
You mentioned there about the fans' view of the fights, and there certainly was a different feel to MMA in Japan than what there is in what we've got in North America now. So with the way the fans viewed it, and with the fact that they wanted someone who was excited, not necessarily someone to win, did that make you change your approach to fighting while you're in Japan?
No, I was always real aggressive. I was always a real get in your face and attack, and wear you out with speed and strength. That was always kind of my style. So over there was just a perfect fit for Japan. Like, they loved it. It was a great fit. Yeah.
Did you think as well with Japan, with like you say there about your aggressiveness and you get in your face, which of course is what you're known for, but do you think they did seem to love that in Japan, but do you think that's because they've got such a big following for pro wrestling as well, so they kind of like the pro wrestling build-up side to some of the MMA fights?
Yeah, they do a lot of, you know, mismatches just to see what happens. You know, Ikuhisha the Punk Minowa versus Giant Silva. You know, it was like a 265-pound, 7'2" man versus a guy that was 210 pounds and 5'10". And they just loved the random mismatch to see what would go on. Remember, it was over, and it was, I want to say Pride 1 was Takano versus Henzo, or versus Hicks and Gracie. That was like the main event of that night. It was ridiculous. Like, they always do these great, big, humongous mix, you know, one, Takano's a pro wrestler versus Hicks and Gracie, who's, you know, Hicks and Gracie, you know, he's the best, according to the family, that Hicks was always the best jiu-jitsu practitioner out there and just never competed. You know, the UFC was started by the Gracie family to have Hickson fight, and Hickson said, no, it'd be better for Hoist to go do it. And so it was for Hickson, but they made Hoist fight, and Hoist is, you know, now the name that everybody runs around with when it comes to MMA. But it was Hickson was like that first deal, and so the Japanese fans love that really weird matchup, and they want to see how it's going to work out, and they love the gimmick. They love the gimmick. That's one of the things they love doing. And it makes it so much easier when you go over to fight, when you know that it's entertainment to them. Wins and losses don't count. It makes it easier as a fighter to be able to compete.
Now, moving forward, obviously, we move forward to early 2000s, and of course, you signed with the UFC. Now, it's worth noting as well that you've built yourself up such a big reputation outside of the UFC that your first fight for the UFC was for the welterweight title, of course, against Matt Hughes. But what was it like fighting for the UFC? What was it like going straight into a title fight?
Well, back then it was so new. The UFC was only doing 6 to 8 fights a year. Like, it was so small. They weren't doing that much. Zuffa had just taken over. Frank and Lorenzo Fertitta had just purchased the company. Dana White was just some guy that he had hair back then. You know, he wore a suit all the time. He had a shirt and tie on all the time. Like, it's a totally different game back then. Like, going into a title fight for the first time in this organization, it didn't mean anything. It just meant there was more money. That's the only difference, because the competitors back then were having to change promotions and fight different places so often because these promotions couldn't keep the guy busy. If a fighter wanted to fight 4 times, he meant to fight for 3 different organizations to make it work. So me jumping in back then wasn't that big of a deal. When it happens now, it's a huge deal. It's a really, really big deal. When it happens now, because there's so much more talent, there's so much longer, and you know, you bring somebody in from the outside, they come over and they get an immediate title shot. It's tough when a guy drops, changes weight classes, and they give him an immediate title shot. That's tough to give him a title shot because there's so many other people in the weight that just are more deserving. back then, it was common practice. Like, they didn't make that much of a difference. And remember, we're at UFC 159 is coming up next. 158 is coming up next.
Yeah.
I fought at UFC 45. That was my first event, was UFC 45. So it was forever ago.
Also, one of the things that always stood out about me, and whenever you were including a build-up to the match, to a fight, there always seemed like bad blood. I remember the bad blood between you and Matt Hughes. I remember the bad blood between you and Dennis Hallman. So, with regards to Matt Hughes, I know you fought Matt Hughes a couple of times. How much of that was part of the build-up, or how much of it was genuine bad blood?
I made it all up. He was serious. I made all mine up. I could care less. He's not a talker, and back then you had to sell a fight. We didn't have pay-per-view and Road to the Octagon and stuff on Fuel and stuff on FX and stuff on Fox. We didn't have all that stuff. All we had was the media machine, the internet media machine. We had, like, Full Contact Fighter. We had Sure Dog. We had MMA Weekly. And that was basically it as far as media that was following MMA as a whole. And so we had to sell stuff. You had to make stuff work. And, you had to pitch it for the pay-per-view show that people want to watch. So somebody asked me the other day, like, you know, what I think about Chael Sonnen, how he talks his way into these fights. I go, what do you think I did? Like, that's what I did to get into these fights, is I just ran my mouth, and that's how it worked. And it's just one of those deals that I had to make stuff up to make it sellable, because Matt's just not going to talk. It's not his style. So people want to watch our fight to want to buy tickets, because that means more income for me later down the road when I go to renegotiate my contracts.
I get what you're saying there, but was there ever any bad blood between anyone that you faced?
Not for me, no, not really. Yeah.
Cool.
I don't really, to me, fighting is a business. This is all about business. So it's not about trying to have to hate the guy I'm across the ring from. It's just a business position. So I'm just trying to fight for a business. So I don't hate any of these guys. If they're friends of mine, I'll fight my friend. I'll fight my training partner just as easy as I fight somebody I don't like or I don't know. Because it's a business. It's not a personal thing. Like, I don't personally, try to get after somebody. I just do it to sell a fight. That's what I'm trying to do.
Now, with regards to the UFC, obviously you had a good run in the UFC. You've obviously come back and fought the UFC since as well. What were your experiences with the UFC? What were they like as a promotion back then to work for?
Back in the day? You could get a hold of, like, back in the UFC, 45, 50, 52, 54, you could get a hold of, you could call Dana White's office and two times out of ten, he'd actually answer it. He'd actually pick up the phone. Donna was just too busy, couldn't get the phone, and Dana just picked it up. Dana White's office, you could walk in, unannounced, no appointment, just walk right in the building. Same office they're in now, just walk right in there, no problem. Now, when you try to get the office, you have to be announced. There's fingerprints to get in. You have to have a fingerprint on file to get in and out of any of the doors. They're all locked and backlocked. It's a maze back there now. You have no idea where you're going. It's a big deal. I mean, it's a really, really big deal now to go over there. Like, the media machine went from, like, 3 at UFC 45 to 103 that wanted to talk to me at UFC 101. So it was like ridiculous, the difference in size of the juggernaut, the marketing machine, the media presence that they have now. The UFC is a completely different animal from UFC 45 to UFC 159, 58, 59, whichever one we got coming up next.
With regards to not just UFC, but MMA in general, when you first started out, could you ever imagine it being the way it is now, the way it's steamrolled and become so global? And obviously, like you say, it's becoming an animal now in a sense.
No, we knew that Dana White was going to make it huge in America. And that was kind of our vision, was like, it's just going to be big in America, and that's kind of where it's going to be, the U.S. and Canada. We didn't realize he was literally going to go over and grab up the biggest organization in the world in Pride, or in Pride and in Dream and all that, and make them be part of the UFC, take over their contracts. Like, we didn't realize that was going to happen. Have them all of a sudden going to Stockholm, where we got to meet each other. Being over in Germany, we had no idea that was going to happen. And then just all of a sudden, Dana just made it happen. Like, Dana went and dragged it and made it happen. But we didn't see that happening, 15 years ago, 16 years ago. That was never going to happen. But now it's just amazing. And he said a couple of years ago, Dana White did, that he wanted to have 100 fights in 1 year. And he wanted to do something where he's having like 4 or 5 fights in one night throughout the world. And I kind of laughed at him when he said it. Like, there's no way it's going to happen. Then flash forward a couple of years, and I was just like, wow, this actually could happen. It's very easy for him to have a fight in Stockholm, a fight in Sydney, Australia, a fight in New Jersey, and then a fight in, or have a fight in LA and have a fight in Montreal, all the same night, all the same time. Now, logistically, it'd be a nightmare. How do you get all the fighters everywhere? Like, what team is going where to cover what? Who's going to film what, doing where? That whole thing logistically is crazy, but it's feasible. It could actually happen now. He's having four fights in one night. We've done it where he had a fight in Australia on a Saturday night in Australia, and they had a fight on a Saturday night in America. Where on Friday night, we're watching a live event from Australia and North America, and then Saturday night, we're watching a live event from North America. It was ridiculous. Like, it can happen now where all of a sudden these guys can throw 100. The expansion of the sport as a whole is ridiculous. Then you get fights like other promotions in the States, like Legacy, Titan Fighting Championships, RFA, Maximum Fighting Championships up in Canada that are riding on that media machine that the UFC has and makes their promotion bigger and better. They're fighting MMA too, and people now are watching it on Fox Local. All of a sudden, now we're going home and watching it live at home as well. Same thing with like Cage Warriors and Bama in England and the UK, where they're able to do the exact same thing with the organization and they can expand so quickly because of the UFC media machine that's helping them in their own countries.
You're absolutely right, and they've paved the way, haven't they, with setting down the, you know, getting it all safe and sanctions and all that, which is fantastic for not just for the UFC but the sport as a whole. I wanted to talk about Bama, because obviously you have fought in Bama twice. In 2011, what was your experiences like fighting in the UK, and what was your experiences like fighting for Bama?
Fighting in the UK is fun. Yeah, I like it. It's a neat time. I like going over there. I don't particularly like your traditional English food. That's not my thing, but it is fun, and I do like fighting over there. I had a great time. I fought John Phillips the first one. I fought Jim Wallhead the second time. You know, it's like any other place. You know, it's easy for us because everyone speaks English, so it makes it simple for Americans to get around because we're too lazy to learn another language. And then it's they're welcoming to us. They're one of our major allies, so that they don't mind Americans walking around town and talking, asking questions. So it was fun. I've always had a great time fighting over in England.
I mean, you have fought, you know, literally all over the world, and you face some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts across the world. So of course, you were one of the biggest names, you know, at one stage as well, and they're still considered, you know, a true MMA veteran. What are some of your personal highlights from your career so far?
I was the first fighter to fight on a main event of a card and also commentate that same main event. I did that in Pride 32 when I fought Misaki. I fought second fight of the night on pay-per-view, and then for the fourth fight of the night before the start of the fourth fight, I was in my shirt and tie and my suit jacket, and I was sitting at the broadcast table, calling the fights. So that's never been done before. No other athlete has ever done that. No other commentator has ever done that, to my knowledge. And I was the first and only one to ever do it, where I actually competed on the main event of a card as well as called that main event from a commentating standpoint. So it was great. It's probably one of the biggest highlights of my entire career, from taking both sides of the coin, being a commentator as well as being a fighter. From a commentating standpoint, well, of course, it's calling Fedor and Krokop fights, calling the Nogueira brothers over in Japan as a commentator. That's been the highlight so far. It's been amazing being able to call those guys and be able to talk to them and interview them before and after. And like, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And then from a fight standpoint, probably the two battles with Hughes obviously are big highlights because everyone remembers those and they still talk about them all the time. But my Trudeau Verissimo fight was a big one for me. And then fighting Dennis Hallman the first time was a big deal because, you know, it was for a title over at WFA. When we fought the second time, it was just him running his mouth trying to get a second fight out of it, but it didn't happen that way. But for him, he ended up getting beat up again anyway, so it didn't really make much of a difference. But those are probably the major highlights so far of my athletic and commentating career.
Yeah, you talked there about the commentary. Now, obviously, that's something that you're still doing. With regards to fighting now, you haven't fought for a couple of years. Do you still plan to fight, or are you looking to put that to one side to concentrate on your commentating?
Yeah, as far as my knowledge, I still have one more fight left with Bama. They just haven't called us to bring us back and have me fight in my last fight in the contract. And then, you know, I get offers all the time to fight, but it's a ratio of during a training camp, of an 8-week training camp, I can only concentrate on fighting for 8 weeks. But during that same 8 weeks, I could commentate all 8 weeks. I could have a show for 8 weeks in a row. So the amount of money that someone needs to pay me just hasn't been, just isn't the amount that these people are calling me with to go fight. I need a significant much more amount of money to stop commentating for those 8 weeks to go fight. So I just haven't been fighting. And now I'm moving on, trying to do more show hosting and trying to do more commentating on bigger shows. And I'm hoping at some point the UFC expands to a third commentating team. Right now they're using Anakin Florian and Goldberg and Rogan. I'm hoping they're going to get so big they're going to need to expand to a third one. I'll be able to at least apply for the job and try to get in there and be one of the guys on that third team. And then, you know, trying to find a home with somebody that I can work, all the time, a couple times a week a couple times a month, doing different stuff for them, getting ready to call fights for them all the time. So I'm just looking for that next big job.
You talked there about programming. What kind of programming have you been doing, or what kind of programming have you got lined up?
Well, I've been trying to do some show hosting. I've been doing some small shows here in Vegas, just some small one-off shows, pilot shows, trying to get my show hosting chops put together. And then I'm working on a couple different shows where I'm actually like a talk show kind of situation. Sports related, but not just MMA related. Trying to do other stuff because that's more what I'm fit for, more what I'm attuned for is being a show host. Of course, everybody wants to be like Joe Rogan, where they have a Fear Factor type of show, and then they select the UFC, and then he also does stand-up comedy as well. Like, everyone wants to be that kind of guy, but I would love to have something like that where I'm show hosting like a big deal, a big deal show, and then moving on to and going on still commentating MMA shows as well.
Now you talk about commentating. Now I know you've got you'll be commentating soon back in the UK. You'll be commentating in Wales for Cage Warriors. What have you got any other commentating coming up that we'd can let us know about?
No, nothing locked in right now. I've been doing a couple of shows here for Spike TV. I'm getting ready to go do a couple of appearances for different Spike TV shows. But as far as commentating goes, the next gig I have is the Cage Warriors gig, and that's the only official gig that I have as of right now. But the way the world of commentating works very strangely, where I'll get a call all of a sudden, hey, we need you next week. Are you available next week to come fly up and do the show? And then all of a sudden I'm doing the show. So it's very strange. Like all of a sudden you won't have any work for like 3 or 4 months, and then you turn around and you're booked for 6 weeks in a row. That's just kind of how it goes.
But it's obviously commentating is something that you love, and you want to try and take that as far as you can, like you did with your fighting.
Right. I do a couple of weekly shows. You know, I'm on the Fight Network. I do a weekly show on the Fight Network up in Canada. I also do a couple of different shows on Dumbass.com. and MMADraft.com. I'm doing a lot of show hosting for MMA Draft. Interviewing amateur fighters on MMA Draft, interviewing on DonBest.com and MMA Oddsbreaker, MMAOddsbreaker.com. I do a lot of fighter interviews where I'm interviewing a bunch of different fighters. I'm waiting for the next commentating job. We got a couple of things in the works, but nothing's been official yet. So I'm waiting to say anything before I want to be signed before I say anything for sure.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Like I said, it was a real pleasure getting a chance to meet you and shake your hand and have a picture taken with you in Sweden. I was really pleased you agreed to come on the show. Before I let you go, I've got one last question to ask you, then I'm going to give you a chance to do a few shout-outs. I recently interviewed Bruce Buffer, and we talked about different things. And one of the things that came up was a funny story with you and him play fighting in the lift. I wondered if you could give me your take on that story.
I have no idea. I have no recollection of what he's talking about at all. No. People have been asking about that thing for years. I have no clue. I mean, Dana White and Mike Goldberg and this guy Tom and some other people were in the elevator with us. And I asked Mike Goldberg if he remembered it. And he's like, I don't, he couldn't remember it either. So, I mean, it's in the book, and it's a significant event with Bruce Buffer because he cut his thumb on my watch. But as far as what actually went down and what happened, I couldn't tell you. I have no clue.
Okay, no problem. Well, it's been a real pleasure having you on to today's show. And just before I let you go, give you any shout-outs. Want to shout out any friends, family, anybody you want to shout out at all?
No one in particular. I've just been, like I said, you know, keep checking out. It's Frank Trigg, usually one word on all the social apps, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. Like, I'm all in that same space, underneath the same name. And then keep checking out MMA Draft, MMA Oddsbreaker, and DonBest.com for my videos that I put up every week.
Cool. I'll post some links to those sites as well underneath the interview. So thank you very much for being on today's show, Frank.
Appreciate it, mate. Thanks.
Okay, we are now joined by Zach Cummings. First of all, Zach, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. So obviously, Zach is just coming off the latest season of Ultimate Fighter. You were due to fight on the finale, but you had to pull out with injury. Is that correct?
Yeah, I tore my hamstring about 2 weeks outside the fight and forced me to pull out of the fight.
Oh, what a shame. So before we talk a little bit about the season, what will happen now then? Will you get another fight in the UFC?
Yeah, I've talked to Dana White. I've talked to Joe Silva. They both completely understand that the injuries happen. And I was actually up training with Chael, so he had talked to me. They knew that it was a legit injury, and I just wasn't making excuses. I actually was trying to fight through it. So they understand, and they said, they'll give me my shot. Just let them know as soon as I heal up, and they'll get me in there.
So what was it like knowing that you've still got that, you've still got that sort of forward to kind of help get you motivated to get yourself healed back up again? Because obviously it's a big opportunity fighting in the UFC, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity, a dream of mine, so definitely hoping it happens.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Ultimate Fighter. Obviously, you were all pulled together, and you were told, of course, which probably by now you knew, you're going to have to fight to get in the house. Now, your first fight was against a pretty well-known guy, obviously well-known as well, pretty well-known guy, Chip Kennedy. What did you know about him going in?
Honestly, I didn't really know much of anything about him. I know he walked by Chael, and, he walked by Chael. I know Chael said something about, that he was a stud or something, and so I knew that. I knew Chael knew him. I knew Chael respected him. A few guys around the gym was kind of talking about him, knowing that, he was a real tough wrestler and everything. So all I really knew is that Chael respected him, knew he was good, and that he was a very good wrestler. That's about all I went off of. And the funny thing is when I walked into the locker room to train or to warm up for my fight, Vinny was in there and was asking, who's fighting Nick Fedetti and all this stuff. And everybody's like, Zach is. And it was Vinny's wrestling coach. So I'm like, I felt like I was set up pretty much, to get beat. I mean, Chael respected the guy, knew the guy. I'm in Chael's locker room and his coaches. And then there were guys like Vinny and everybody who, that was his wrestling coach. So everybody was pretty much expecting Nick to just walk right through me.
Obviously, that's not what happened. I mean, and I'm sure you went into the fight and you knew you could win the fight. Did you expect to win it like that?
I didn't, honestly. I knew it would be – I was expecting a war. I mean, I knew the guy's a very good wrestler. I'm a decent wrestler myself, but, I'm not I want the gold in it. So, I felt pretty good in all aspects of the game, but, did I know I was going to come out there and catch him with the lead hook and drop him in 7 seconds? No, I wasn't expecting that at all, but I was happy.
How nice is it to move through that fight and not just obviously win the fight, but obviously move through with obviously zero damage and get yourself off into the house?
Yeah, it was great having no damage for the house. Downside is I was the very last guy to fight the prelims, and I actually kind of got a little beat up throughout practice. So I was a little more beat up for the second fight than I would have been if I fought a little earlier. But that's kind of what you expect whenever you train that hard with that many good guys.
What was it like in the house? What was it like training with not just the other fighters, but training with the coaches as well?
It was a great experience. It actually gave me a lot of confidence. I mean, I've got a 15-3 record. I've fought on some big levels and some big stages. But having that many guys my size and all the same weight class and everything, going at it was really good to kind of – it was great training, but then also having the coaches, we had Chael, Yushin Okami, who's one of the top middleweights, in the world, was there, and, we were able, a couple of us were able, to hold our own with him, and that really gave me a big confidence booster, knowing how good he is, and I mean, I know practice is practice, but, you know, being able to beat him at certain times and in certain positions and, you know, having good rounds against him really is a confidence booster. So, I mean, it was amazing.
Now, one of the things that stood out to me as well was, obviously, after that you'd all fought, you're all in the house, after you'd all fought and you had your 7-3, you're then going to get your wild card slots. It was down to four guys. It was between you and King Casey, and it was between Clint Hester and Bubba McDaniel. Now, I was watching that as a fan, and we obviously knew they were going to pick one from each team. And my first thought was it should be Clint, because he looked really good in his fight when he lost. And it should have been you. You had a pretty close fight. If I remember rightly, your fight, it looked like you'd won a round and he'd won a round, but of course ended up giving like a 10-10 round or something, and you obviously lost a close decision. Where King Casey, he didn't look that great in his fight, and he kind of gassed out. So I thought you two should have been the wild card. Were you surprised at the wild card picks?
I was very surprised. I didn't know. I knew Clint and Bubba would be a pretty, you know, it'd be a toss-up because, you know, they both were submitted, but, you know, they both actually had pretty decent fights and everything. I respect Clint a lot. I do kind of agree that, Jones made the right decision of giving it to Bubba, that he, you know, he's been in the sport a lot longer, he's put in a lot more time, and that was his deciding factor. If that was his deciding factor, then I agree with it. It was a really close call for either one of them. I was very surprised I didn't get it. I mean, like you said, I thought I won the first round. It was very close. I mean, I won the first half, but it was complete domination. And the second half, you know, I let him sweep me, and he was throwing some elbows. The thing is, on TV, not a lot landed. A lot of them were missing and glancing, and so I really didn't take any damage on the ground. He was just controlling, but I still thought I won that round. Even the second round, he controlled, 4 minutes of the round. He didn't even remember that entire round. I about had him knocked out, and, me being stupid, I went for that flying knee, and he caught me, took me down, and controlled me, which, I would have liked to have seen that round. Stood up a few times, her being kept threatening to stand it up and never did. But, I mean, I can't really blame someone, for me not getting up. So, I was surprised. I thought I should have had it. Afterwards, Chael came up to me and said that Dana was very impressed with my performance, the fight to get in the house, the fight with Dylan, and I guess he really thought that I would get another shot in the UFC by my performance. And he said he couldn't say the same about Kevin Casey. Kevin just showed up and just didn't perform at all. And he said that he made that decision to give Kevin a second chance to basically to prove himself to Dana White and try to get a fight in the UFC. And that's how it was explained to me. And if that was his, I should have lost in the first place, so I can't really get upset with someone for not giving me a second chance. But I was surprised. But that was the explanation that I was given.
I've got to be honest with you, that's awful. Absolutely terrible. You're supposed to be picked on, your performances in the house and who showed the most, and that's why they give you the wild card slot. And to give it for that reason, I mean, that just seemed, for me as a fan, that just seems absolutely terrible. I mean, my first thought, like I said, was it should have been you versus Clint. And ironically, that was supposed to be the fight in the finale as well, which was quite ironic because that should have been the... I'm really surprised at that. I think that's a really, really bad call. I mean, Chael Sonnen come across really well on the show. I mean, he's a great fighter, a great coach, and a great personality. And he did, he did come across really well on the show. And I'm a bit surprised at that. What was it like working with Chael on such a close level? Because he obviously is, probably one of the biggest names in the sport at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan of Chael's back when he first was getting a fight with the WC and everything, before he really started bringing out that big persona and all the talking to the media and everything. So I didn't know what to expect, knowing it was going to be, a televised reality show and everything where the camera's always going to be on him. Was he going to be himself? Was he going to be that character that he normally comes out with? And he honestly surprised me, and he is a very, very good pro. He's a great coach. You know, he's an amazing fighter, but he is just an amazing person. Like, he's a very, very solid individual, and being able to get that close and to meet him and see how he really is it was a great experience. And I even went out to Portland and trained for, about 4 weeks out there with him, and, you know, off camera and everything, and he was the exact same way. So, that he has earned so much respect for me that it's not even funny, and I'll be a fan of his, and I will, back him up till the day I die, pretty much.
I've got to be honest. I mean, I like Chad. I mean, obviously, I've not interacted with like you have, but I like him. I like what he does. I think the way he promotes himself is fantastic. But watching him on the show, it was a different. You did seem to see a different side to him, and the way, especially when he was one to one with somebody, he seemed to just be able to. There seems to be a connection between him and whoever he was talking to at that time. And he certainly, I think, he won a lot of people over on that show. I think they've seen a very, very kind of personal side to him rather than the persona that he puts out.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of people judged him towards, a lot of stuff he was saying to amp up the Anderson Silva fights and everything, talking about Brazil. But, he really just found a good way to sell himself and market himself. And that's kind of what he was doing. But the real Chael Sonnen is what you see on the show. And I think a lot of people realize that. And that's why he gained a whole new fan base and actually changed a lot of people's minds. So, and I'm really happy actually for him that people actually get to see the real Chael.
Now, let's talk about some of the other stuff that we saw go on in the house. There's obviously a lot of hype during the whole season about the man everyone was scared to fight, and obviously Dana White loved Uriah Hall, and we saw what he did to Adam Seller and what he did to Bubba McDaniel. Obviously, I think a lot of people expected Uriah Hall to make the final. Was you surprised at the fact that he was facing Calvin Gastelum in the final?
It's different. It's very different because when we're training every day, we're all competing. Kelvin was definitely probably the worst link on our team. He was the worst guy there. He wasn't a great grappler anywhere. He's a decent wrestler, not amazing. He's a decent boxer. He was just pretty good everywhere, but he wasn't really great at anything. And he was the last one picked. I mean, during practice, once again, I mean, obviously practice doesn't mean much because Kevin Casey is an absolute monster in practice. And that also might have been one of the reasons that, Chael gave him another chance on the wild card because he knew how good he really could be. Kelvin was pretty much getting beat by everybody every day. And, when it came to striking, Uriah was the same way. Uriah is a very good striker. If someone was able to take him down and put pressure on him and get him out of his element, then, he was getting beat quite a bit too. So, knowing how dangerous Uriah was, it didn't surprise me, especially the route he took. I mean, he got Adam, which was a great matchup for him. And then, when he fought Bubba, who just got done fighting multiple fights and everything. And, he caught him with a great right hand. And put him to sleep. And then he fought Dylan, who had, Dylan had 3 wars and could barely walk before he even had that fight. So I'm not taking anything away from you, right? He's a great fighter, and he's got a bright future. I mean, the UFC, they love him. He's very marketable. He's a very good fighter, and I don't care who you are, he is dangerous. I mean, if he hits you and catches you with what he's good at, he's putting someone to sleep. Kelvin just was having fun the whole time. And just kept going in there and winning. I mean, he was the underdog in every fight. And he just put his game face on and went to work. And it was so fun to watch. And, he became a little brother to, all of us. And, I think after he beat Josh, I don't know if you guys saw the celebration between our team. But I was more excited for him winning that fight than, I get whenever I win a fight. It was a weird feeling. The house messes with you. It messes with your mind and everything because, you live with these guys and you make really good friends. So even though it's a fighting competition, like, we really got close to each other. And, you know, Kelvin just won everybody over. He's just that goofy little kid that was, you know, was having a great time and just always smiling. And then when he, you know, came to fight, he showed up. And honestly, I had a few interviews beforehand. I told him he was going to beat Uriah. He wasn't scared of him. He was just going to put pressure on him. And that's what he did. He went out there and, you know, he didn't give Uriah that space for his timing. And he went out there and took the fight from him.
Yeah, he certainly did do that. And it was very, very impressive. Now, during the show, obviously excluding any bouts that you were involved in, not the preliminaries, but which fight surprised you the most?
There was a lot, honestly. A lot of them was with Kelvin. You know, Kelvin and Bubba surprised me. Kelvin and Josh really surprised me. And then, yeah, Uriah and Bubba, that was a surprise. I mean, even though I thought, you know, Uriah could, you know, have the potential to catch Bubba and stuff like that, I didn't expect anything to be, you know, a 9-second knockout. I mean, it was just very fast and it just happened. But, you know, that's kind of the way the sport works.
Yeah, it was
you can't really get too surprised in this sport. You have to, with the good guys, we could have that tournament 10 times and probably have a different winner every time. I think it was one of the rare seasons where they had a lot of good talent on the show and not just, you know, or two guys. That was pretty much you know who's going to win it, and that was about it. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to be surprised to get that many good fighters together.
It was a fantastic season, and it shows. That's why, you know, obviously excusing yourself because you were injured, and obviously we had two of the guys on a week before in Sweden, but everyone who made the house got a fight, which wasn't the case for the previous event. Now, I know Patrick's eager to jump in. Before I do let him jump in, I just want to ask you one more thing. Obviously, I'm based in the UK, and there was, of course, a British fighter in the house, Luke Barnett. I know he was on your team. What were your thoughts of Luke?
Luke is like one of my best friends in the house. You know, we were roommates. There was me, Luke, and Thor, you know, who was from Sweden. So it was kind of funny. You had my little country self, and then there was the two Europeans room with me. But Luke's a great guy. He came in the house with a great attitude. He knew he was young. You know, multiple times he was like, I don't even deserve to be here. You know, he knew he only had so many fights. And, you know, there was guys that, you know, I mean, like, I was 15-3 that, you know, fought on the big stage. There's, you know, Bubba was 21-6. Dylan had the fights. So, I mean, he really was just there for the experience. And he was, understood, he was just going to learn from the whole experience and just run with it and the exposure. And I mean, you know, we had a good time we were there, and he learned, and he got so much better the time we were there. And then, he was actually out in Portland training with me and Chael, before the finale and stuff, getting ready, you know, and we stayed together and roomed together there again. And it was amazing to see how much better he got, you know, from the show, till now. So, I mean, he's young. He just turned 25, the night that he won and on the finale. And he just learned so fast. You show him one thing and he just picks it up. So he's a great guy. He's got a bright future. I mean, he's one of those where he's great interviewed. He's very marketable, and I honestly think the world of Luke, and I know that we'll be in touch and in contact for a long time, because I can't wait to go over there to the UK and train with him and see him as much as I can.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it was great watching him on the show. He was a great ambassador for the UK as well, and he come across so well on the show. The way he carried himself, the way he trained. And of course, he had great fights in the house with the flying knee, and then the war with Dylan, which he was winning at one stage. I mean, he even won a round off his back, which is very unusual in MMA. But I know Patrick's eager to jump in, so I'll let Patrick go. You good to go, Patrick?
Yeah, sure am, Ray. And Zach, thanks again for your time. We really appreciate you coming on with us today.
No problem, man. Thank you for having me on. It was great.
Man, we're sure stoked to have you. So I want to go back just a little bit. Your last fight before you got on the Ultimate Fighter, you took on Brandon Newsome. You ended up winning in the first round. You slipped one of his punches beautifully. You took him down and just grinded him out. You ended up working your way to, I believe it was a mounted guillotine. Were you expecting him to come out so aggressive in that fight with the strikes?
I really had – they threw that fight together, like, on a week or 2 weeks or whatever it was. I mean, I was supposed to have a fight somewhere else, and the guy backed out on me in, like, Nebraska or something. And a promoter was putting a show on in my hometown. And Springfield was like, well, hey, you know, how about we get you a fight? So, you know, I said, why not? You know, they tried to get someone, and, you know, they couldn't find anybody to take it. And so the next day, you know, they called me and said, how about this Brandon Newsome guy? And, I mean, I looked at, you know, he had about a 500 record. He had, you know, quite a few fights, most of his losses were just very tough guys. So I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't, you know, get to see any film on him. And, yeah, he came out and was, he came out to battle and kind of caught me off guard and stuff. And I really wasn't very happy with my performance in that fight. But, I mean, I was able to put him away pretty quick and everything, which I was happy about. But, I don't know, he just kind of picked me on my own right off the bat by coming out so aggressive. But, I was just happy to fight through it and, you know, get the win.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's got to be even more gratifying, just being able to do that, you know, not having seen the film of him. And, you know, of course, with the record, you know, and like you said before, we all know with MMA, you never know what's going to happen. 7-7 or not, you know, anything could happen. So definitely a solid W. And also, when you walked your walkout for that fight, your walkout song was Slayer's Rain in Blood. Are you a metalhead, or was that the promoter's choice?
That was the promoter's choice. I mean, I actually do have that CD, but I normally walk out to a little, like, rock country type stuff. With them, I just didn't really care. They played whatever, and they went with Slayer. So, I mean, I do like the song, but I'm not a crazy metalhead, but, you know, I like a little bit of everything, and Slayer's definitely in my stack of CDs that I have, so, you know, I wasn't too upset, but I didn't pick it.
Well, that's cool. Gotta keep the music selection well-rounded, just like the skill set. So going back to the Ultimate Fighter, obviously, you guys talked about it a little bit on the show. You had tried out for the Ultimate Fighter, I think it was said 7 times. So how awesome was it when you finally get there to get that quick knockout over Nick Fichetti? I mean, that was brutal.
Yeah, it was an amazing feeling, honestly. I mean, I tried out multiple times. It was, I went to 7 tryouts. I tried out 6. One of them was when I did US versus UK. They switched to the weight class after I already had, like, everything bought. So I went out there to support my teammates to try it out, but I didn't actually try out. But still, 6 tryouts is enough. And, after getting selected and everything, I mean, it was like, okay, finally I jumped through every hoop they wanted me to over and over again. I'm here. It would be an absolute shame to lose this fight, and it's all for nothing. So having that, you know, I mean, the fight go the way it did was, it was amazing. I mean, I didn't expect it at all. I mean, I know I've got heavy hands, and, you know, he dropped his. I saw it. I just caught him with a, you know, a solid hook and put him to sleep. So I was on cloud 9. I mean, I was incredibly happy. You know, it proved to everybody that gave me the shot on the show that, you know, they made the right decision. So it was a great feeling.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, and I know you and Ray talked about it a little bit, your fight with Dylan, it was a solid fight. You know, I think you were winning the stand-up. You tagged him up a little bit in the first round, got the takedown. You busted him up, opened up a nice gash on the side of his head, had him bloody. And it really was a close first round, probably with you, just for damage. And, like you said, there was a flying knee that led to his takedown, and you know, he didn't land too much damage from the top, but I guess, you know, just the top position, he ended up getting the decision. So would you say that fight was a learning experience and for the Ultimate Fighter experience overall?
With that fight, I mean, it just, I think I got the, you know, you have to be exciting, you know, for everybody to, you know, for them to want to like you and want to put you on there, you know, like that was like another shot right here. I just want to be as excited as I can. You know, I'm following up a 7-second knockout. You know, I thought I had him dazed and everything. Like, all right, well, you know, let's go for something, you know, flying, you know. I just need to, I definitely learned that, you know, take a breath and don't give them, you know, a lot of time to recover, but, or, you know, let's be smart and pick our shots and, you know, be professional about it and not just, you know, go outside like a little schoolgirl and try to just fly in with something. But, I don't know. So, I mean, I just really learned that, I mean, I know that I belong there. I know I belong with the best guys in the world. And I just say, whenever I fight my fight, I'm very, very dangerous. And I just have to keep guys where I want them. And, you know, just, and if I'm in a bad position, I finish fights. And that's what I need to do, and that's what I plan on doing in the future.
Beautiful. Well, you definitely showed a lot of great talent on the Ultimate Fighter and in your career leading up to that point. So, again, just finally having made tough. It seemed like this season just really, it breathed a lot of new life into the series. You know, the filming style was great. A lot of people were talking about it. The documentary style, they changed it up. But really, more importantly, yourself and all the guys on the season, they came out to fight and they put on some great performances and the ratings showed that. How awesome was it for the season overall to go so well once you finally got there?
I mean, the season went great. You know, I went in, I've seen, you know, multiple seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. One of my best friends, Michael Johnson, was on it and, you know, made it to the finale and everything. So I was expected, you know, some type of dipshit in the house, you know, someone just being, acting an idiot and breaking things and everything. And we just didn't have it. Everybody was so professional and got along and matched. Even, you know, some people kind of was giving Uriah a hard time and, some people thought Colin was a little different, you know, but no one really, like, pushed it, you know, and everybody still had, like, even though, I mean, you got that many guys in the house for 7 weeks or whatever it was, yeah, there's going to be little arguments, little, I don't know, little temper tantrums, I guess, I don't know, but it wasn't that bad. Like, no one freaked out, everybody got along, and it was amazing. I mean, the downside to that is, you know, I had all these crowds filled with Fighter, which I probably don't walk through in one of them, and I show up to the one where everybody is an amazing fighter, and it was the toughest season, hands down, of talent. So, you know, I finally make it, and I got thrown into it. But then again, you know, I'm tied to that title, you know, of Tough 17, and everybody's going to remember it and know how good and how talented that season was. So, I mean, you know, even though I didn't make it near as far as I planned on or should have and, you know, could have, I'm still happy with the whole experience and I would do it all over again.
Beautiful. Well, I tell you what, Zach, we're definitely pleased to hear that you're going to be getting another shot. I mean, it definitely sounds that way. We want to wish you the best. Hopefully you heal up quick and come back 100%. And, before we let you go, we just want to give you a chance to give a shout-out to your sponsors, Fight Camp, and feel free to let the fans know how they can get a hold of you on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, definitely. The main thing I want to thank is, you know, my family, you know, my wife Amy for putting up with me for being gone so long, and Grindhouse MMA here in Kansas City, Springfield Fight Club down in Springfield, Missouri, and as of lately, one MMA, you know, out there in Portland where Chael trains, you know, they pretty much adopted me and took me on and showed me a lot. That was great. If you want to keep up with me, I've got, you know, hit me up on Facebook, you know, Zach Cummings. I have a fan page, Zach Cummings MMA. And on Twitter and Instagram is @ Zach Cummings and ZAK. So hit me up, follow me, and I don't know, take control of the goofy stuff I post and put on there, and I'll answer any questions anybody ever asks. So I really try to do my best with keeping up with fans and answering them as much as I can.
We really appreciate your time today. I was really pleased when you agreed to go on the show. So it just, as Patrick said, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. So, you know, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Zach.
All right, thanks, Zach.
No problem. Bye.
Okay, that was this week's show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed our debut on MMA Victor. I'm working on guests for next week. I've got three guests tentatively booked. Obviously, always got to try and get things definitely confirmed, and sometimes interviews can be cancelled for whatever reason. But three guests I've been interacting with that have all agreed to come on the show. I just need to finalise things. Another Tough 17 contestant, Bubba McDaniel. A Pride FC veteran, a real true veteran of the sport, Enson Inoue. He'll be known by you hardcore fans. And also a really, really going from hardcore, a veteran, sorry, to a modern day warrior, UFC bantamweight, and probably ranked maybe number four in the world at the moment, or maybe five, number four or five, depending on if you put him above or below Uriah Faber. But we've got Michael Mayday McDonald. I'm in talks with getting him on the show next week as well. So definitely tune in for next week's show and look out for MMA Victor Radio. We'll have a new show on every day, every weekday starting from next week.